This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. UMNO's Dato Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob has been appointed the 9th Prime Minister of Malaysia after 114 out of 220 MPs pledged their support to him. The status quo remains. Now, one can't help but wonder what all the drama and the anxiety that many Malaysians have been feeling over the past couple of weeks, perhaps longer than that, right? What has it been for exactly? What did the many protests accomplish? But more than that, there's also this question of what next? If the progressives intend to take the power from the elite for the and give it back to the people, what do we need to think about differently moving forward? Now, recently, S. Arut Chelvan, who is the Vice President of Parti Socialist Malaysia, wrote a piece on Malaysia Kini BM titled Hakikatnya Gerakan Rakyat Juga Gagal. Now, I think it's a pertinent and powerful piece that reflects on the shortcomings of the left-leaning progressives, including his own party, and discusses what we need to do next as we head towards GE15 and future elections. Arul joins me on the show today to share his thoughts. Welcome to the show, Arul. How are you?
Welcome, Darshan. Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
So, Arul, why did you decide to write this piece in the first place?
Okay, I mean, I've been in about 100 WhatsApp groups, you know. I've been in WhatsApp group primarily all Malays, some with all Indians, you know, and some multiracial, and it came to me there's so much trolls in the WhatsApp group, so much of jokes, you know, about Ismail Sabri, what batik shirt he wears, and you know about Anwar as the waiting PM, you know. And a lot of stories, some very, a lot of frustration, a lot of jokes. It exceeds the rakyat. We are just at the sideline, you know, watching this whole, our lives are determined by few people, where decisions are made in hotels and luxury, not by the people. So it's a very sad thing, you know, and I thought that it's important that we reflect the failures we ourselves made as people, you know. Have we done enough? Yeah.
I think that's an interesting point, right? Because in the last 18 months, we went from Pakatan Harapan in May 2018 to the government, the electorate voted out in GE14. You know, in between, we had Muhyiddin, which was the prime minister, which happened after Langkah Sheraton. And now Ismail Sabri from UMNO has been sworn in as the prime minister after last week's round of musical chairs and all of that. Now, as you mentioned, none of these decisions were made by the people at all. We just sat down and watched the show unfold. How did this happen?
I think the main thing is because of the simple majority, you know, where the ruling party has a majority of just 5 to less than 10 seats, you know, sometimes even two to three seats. And because of that, it opens up rooms for maneuvering, blackmailing, you know, where, you know, buying over MPs using JLCs, using MACC to threaten MPs to change their party alliances, all that, just to keep in power, lah. You know, and in a situation where there is, you can't go to the, this did not only happen at the federal level. If you look at Perak, there was a change in government. Not really the change of the ruling elite, just the change, as you mentioned, the musical chair, you know, from Perikatan Nasional to UMNO. It also happened in Melaka. Only thing in Sabah, there was an election called. You know, it's similar thing happened, but Melaka, an election was called, and we had this whole COVID coming all over the country. You know, so the question of election, with the absence of no elections, and then you have a simple majority, I think it opens up for all this blackmailing. And the rakyat are so, because under the parliamentary system, you don't have to go back. You know, you can just, those who has the highest majority actually takes power, you know. So they found a way how to do it without going to get the people's mandate. Yeah.
Right. Now, since Langkah Sheraton, we've had the birth of Parti Muda, as well as youth movements. And then youth movements have, you know, been growing, and it really manifested in over the past couple of months, especially the close to, you know, more than 1,000 people, close to 2,000 people went to, essentially they tried to go to Dataran Merdeka, but then the protest ended up taking place in front of Masjid Jami LRT. And this is the Lawan movement, of course. Now, people's movements are, of course, important, but you seem to think that, you know, these movements are lacking something, as I've read in your article. Now, what are these movements lacking specifically?
I think firstly, I think for Lawan to organize something during the pandemic is quite an interesting thing, lah. You know, it's a very difficult question, you know, because there's a lot of dilemmas whether people should gather or not, you know. But there's also, when you don't gather, you know, when you don't go to the street, it also shows a lack in the movement. No? But what I was trying to raise is, people shouldn't get comfortable, you know, organizing a rally of about 1,000 people. You know, sometimes you have the feel-good factor, but then it is not enough to bring about change. And change cannot be centered just in Kuala Lumpur or some places, you know. So a lot of people, I think a lot of people might give their support through online and all that, you know. But I think at the end of the day, people should be involved in the change itself. So I think I won't criticize Kita Lawan, but I feel that a lot of the Malaysian people are not really involved in this movement, in this political change, you see. I give you an example. Like, for example, when you know, a lot of people, poverty, for example, you get all over people collecting food stuff and giving, you know. That clearly shows how the rakyat can mobilize themselves to do it, you know.
Yep.
But then why on political change, this mass base is not utilized, you know. Our people think our work is only to do a certain thing. These are all politics. Let's leave it to politicians. And another thing is, a lot of people involved in Parti Muda or even in PSM is actually activist-oriented. So activists organize and go to the streets. So almost all the people there are activists, you know. So right. It's like, so it needs to go to a bigger circle.
Okay, and you know, you specifically said, you know, the protests shouldn't be just based in Kuala Lumpur and all of that. And I think that is something I really want to dive deeper into in this conversation, right? Because you are someone who's very experienced in the field of activism. And I don't think you are, like you mentioned, you're criticizing movements that take place in the city or anything. But why is it important to go beyond that?
I think all this while, you know, changes, you know, people talk about electoral changes. But you see, a lot of things we are listening is the voices of those in the urban areas, you know. And you see, like, protests like Bersih, yeah? If you look at the second Bersih, it was very well, you know, though it was in KL, but it was participated, a lot of people from East Malaysia all came down, you know, busloads of people. But if you look at Bersih 4 and 5, it's very much urban-centered. Very much people around KL, and it doesn't comprise a multiracial society, you know, the Bersih 4 and 5. So for me, that is problematic, you know, because I think that, you know, so when it comes to electoral, 125 seats out of the 222 seats are based in the rural sector.
Right.
You know, so if you go to East Semenanjung, Kelantan, Terengganu, and all that, it's a very different demography, you know, different issues, you see. So, but then a lot of things we listen in the troll and in the WhatsApp group are very, you know, people get complacent with this view, you know. They think, well, all over the country, you know, people are opposed to it. It's not true. At the grassroots level, there are different issues which need to be dealt with, you know, and this movement need to go there, harness the strength of the other Malaysians, and then that would make to a stronger point. Just like in you know, like if you look in Thailand, for example, the current government, the military government, has the support of the urban, but the rural folks, so they even change election laws to make rural voting not so important as urban. You know. They do all sorts of nonsense. You know. So I think we have to, our movement have to be more holistic, have to go into the sectors where can make about change. Because we keep complaining elections, you know, and all that, but there's not enough work done at the semi-rural, rural areas.
And that is something very interesting, this idea that we sometimes, because we are, you know, on Twitter, because we are in our WhatsApp groups, in our bubbles, in our echo chambers, we think, you know, what we are saying or what activists are doing, for example, represents wider Malaysia, right? But it does not necessarily represent people in many, many, many different parts of the country.
Yeah, I mean, you see, sometimes this is the problem with, you know, when you mobilize based on some things. For example, if you ask me, most people would agree for a mobilization to have more ICUs bill or ventilators bill.
Right.
For example, you know, more people would think that you need job security now. We need jobs now, you know, but you don't see this kind of protest coming up so much, you know. So you see, in Malaysia, if you look at something like ICERT or HINDRAF and all that, where something is based on, like ICERT doesn't really infect any of us, you know, not even the majority Muslims. It doesn't affect them, you know. But then you can mobilize them based on that quite easily. So again here, Kita Lawan is talking more about change of government, asking Muhyiddin to step down, you know. I mean, most of the people are fed up. They're fed up because just if there's no pandemic now, there's no COVID now, maybe, you know, they are reacting to a current situation, very frustrated. But then, so when they address these issues, of course, some will look at it as just a political maneuvering done. Lah. So for me, I think this is why it's important for activists to go and talk to other people, no, talk to organized panda riders, sit with them. What's the issue? Can we organize them? So let's put these issues together, you know? And when you talk to common people, you finally understand the issue is not actually race and religion. You know, I have once, you know, session with hospital cleaners, multiracial hospital cleaners. I had it in Taiping, about 100 of them attended, you know. I asked them, what is their main issue? Is Zaki Naik your main issue? is this your main issue, you know? Is I said, no, what is your main issue? They said, gaji tak cukup. You know, system, you know, we are losing jobs. Contractor takkan sambung kerja, you know. So these are the main issues. But then it doesn't come up, you know, because we have not organized this issue, make it into a national issue, you know. So we end up looking at Anwar Ibrahim, Zabri, Zaid Hamidi, Azman Ali, get excited about video clips, you know, about, you know, all these things have been put there. We actually divert from the real issues.
So if that's the case, right, you're talking a lot about moving beyond urban. Why is it important? Because you talked about, you know, poor people, even Grab drivers and all of these different aspects. You know, in your article, you even touch on, you know, farmers, fishermen, things like that, right? Or the need to organize these sorts of communities. If that is the case, right, if these are where the gaps are, the inability to organize farmers to get to the root issues, so then why are all these new, when we have new parties, political parties, when we have new NGOs coming up, and it's very inspiring, then why are they all centered in the city?
I think good question. But I think it's also, it's more difficult work to go into the rural areas to organize them. Another thing is a lot of people also have this mindset that people in rural areas just want handout. They are subsidy orientated. You know, when Pakatan Harapan came to power, some of the things they did, which was quite, some of the things is they stopped subsidy for the rubber tappers, you know, the smallholders, for the fishermen, because they said it was mismanaged, corruption, you know. But actually, this was not a big amount of money. There was massive corruption happening elsewhere, you know, in GLCs and all that, you know. But they hit on this group of people, you know. So in this group of people, they made this group of people basically those who are handout oriented, subsidy oriented, you know. I think what we need to do is go there and organize this kind of people, tell them how important they are. You know, they are not playing in the... And to do that, I think groups have to go and organize in rural areas. You know, most NGOs are based in Kuala Lumpur, Penang. You know, if besides Kuala Lumpur, Penang, then you have Johor. You know, that's how NGOs movements are. And the grassroots NGOs, there are also groups like ABIM, a lot of them based in the rural areas, but they are very welfaristic oriented, not politically oriented, because they feel that, you know, they do service orientation. A lot of people do service work as well, which is important work, you see. But they have to get involved into the political circles. They have to demand for political changes. They have to be part of it, you know. They have to organize themselves. And people need to help these groups to build them, build empower and all that. I think that is what is missing, you know. Not that urban work is completely hopeless or lonely, but
yes,
you need to have a balance.
Yeah, think beyond Twitter is what you're saying. On the show with me today is S. Arut Chelvan, the Vice President of Parti Socialist Malaysia. After the break, I'll be asking him if the so-called progressive Pakatan Harapan voters can be ignorant about realities on the ground. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is S. Arut Chelvan, the Vice President of Parti Socialist Malaysia. And we're reflecting on some of the shortcomings of, you know, of the progressives and of the progressive movements in recent times, just so that we can learn from these lessons. So, Arul, now, how do we, like, really take back the power from the, you know, the words that people use, kayangans, the elites? How do we take the power from them and give it back to the people so that they feel empowered and they feel like they have the power?
I think first the demands, you know, what are the rakyat demands, you know? I think those days, things are more difficult now, because those days you have unions, you have jobs where, today you have what you call flexi working hours, flexi wages. Irregular sectors, you know, so people are working in your own house and, you know, gig economy and all that, you know. So things are very difficult to organize. But on the other hand, you have a lot of apps which you also have. Facebook, a lot of things, WhatsApp to organize people as well. So these are the two dilemmas. But I think we need to get into organizing, get different sectors of people. And then if you get different sectors of people and put priorities, you'll understand that all the people, Malays, Chinese, Indians, they have the same aspirations. They all want good healthcare, housing. You know, most of them are not talking about whether the share market goes up or not. They want, these are the basic things, you know. So we have to bring these voices out, you know, and you need to be organized. So I think political parties, for example, have to, you know, like Pakatan Harapan, if they want to win over support, like even recently Rafizi also mentioned it, you can't win support just by getting the urban votes. You know, you have to go to rural areas and not create a handout mentality. Handout mentality means you don't empower the rural base. You just make them recipient of money, you know. So you have to make them look that, you know, they are important players. Their issues are important. Their votes are important, and then empower them. So I think this kind of organizing work have to be done, even including with the gig economy, riders. You know, people so good in doing apps on something. You know, you see now the change apps is getting a lot of momentum. You know, people want to change someone, you go put in apps and all that, you know. But I think real changes have to happen from below above, you know. What we see now, Sheraton move is above, few people deciding and push it down, you know. So I think it goes back to basics. You need to organize people and you have to put out main demands, you know. So if I see a lot of demands which really get a lot of traction lately, like for example, like the Kar Javi issue, 6 pages can disunite the whole country. And it is not real issues faced by the people. When you talk to people directly, actually they don't really bother. But so we have to bring the real demands, and it must be done multiracially. It needs to have cross-section among the multi-race base, you know. No. I think there's way of doing it. For example, I see, if you have a gathering of all Indians and you bring one Malay leader there, all the Indians in the audience will be very, their demands will be very rational. Similarly, you have all Malay audience, you bring a Chinese or Indian leaders with the other people, the audience, so basically, people tend to be more rational when they're together with other races. When they're with all races, you get all the, I want this, I want that, I want this, the other fellow is taking it, robbing it from me, and politicians also play politics. When they see all Indian group, they will talk. And they come to multiracial, the same politician will talk different languages. So don't allow them to do that. Create environment where you're forced to talk language of all the people. I think we have to create those kind of situations.
Now, Arul, I want to ask, do you think that it's not just, when it comes to the activists who are organizing and mobilizing, or perhaps like, journalists who are putting out the messages, conveying the messages, right? Do you think the so-called progressive Pakatan Harapan voters have this tendency to be very, very ignorant and perhaps arrogant as well? Now, for example, when I talk to, a lot of people, right? I'm just casually, or I overhear conversations in a lot of our urban circles, right? Or what I hear are comments like, whenever, let's say, if something goes wrong during elections, if Lanka Sheraton happens and all these kinds of things, right? What I hear is, it's the Malays in the rural areas, they never change. They always like stupidly just vote for UMNO and PAS. You hear these comments a lot. Now, what do these so-called progressive voters, what do you need to understand about why the Malay heartland keeps voting for UMNO and PAS, and why UMNO and PAS have such a stronghold in those areas?
I think one is, you said it very well, ignorance and arrogance. And it comes in a package, actually. Because another thing is, I think a lot of time is that stereotyping, from small, we have been stereotyped that the Malay fellas, they are like that, we know better, they're not educated and all that, But if you see the issues in the among the farmers, the smallholders, they're actually very real issues. They're very simple people. They're very worried, they feel very insecure. And also because this insecurity is, they feel that, for example, if you have a Chinese finance minister, he's going to discriminate you, And this feeling is very deep, you see. So it is also then when Pakatan Harapan came to power and they stopped the... Actually, they're trying to fight corruption, They're trying to... When they stopped the subsidies for the farmers and all that, it is seen, of course, as Chinese taking away our money, So I think this is the problem. So I think the bigger thing is to actually go down, create a situation where the rural poor, the urban poor, they themselves can have their own mechanism how to check and balance, Get them involved in the process, Don't make them just subjects alone, They're also part of the change, you see. So I think there is a lot of insecurity among voters in the rural areas. They don't trust a lot of people. And similarly, there is a stereotyping. You have urban stereotyping about rural stereotyping about urban, and this goes on and on. No? The only way to... So I think some of the fears the rural community has is real, actually. You cannot just ignore it. You cannot say that these fellas all, they are stupid, they don't know anything. They also discuss among themselves, and they also got families. They worry about the same issues with the urban people worry, But because, we are in Twitter, we are in all these clubhouses, all these groups which are very linked to a certain class of people, then we think our what we say is the correct version, you see. We don't cut across. I can tell you, like, you know, when I was handling eviction issues, you know, there was this Malay kampung, Surau, you know, was being demolished. And, you know, the person tells me, the Malay guy who's defending the Surau tells me, he said, Encik Arul, you know why they break the Surau? Because we are Malays. If it's an Indian temple or a Chinese temple, the government won't break. If you go to an Indian area, they'll tell you the same thing. They'll tell you, you know, you see, because we are Indians, they're breaking the temples, you know. But actually, that Surau and that Indian temple are facing eviction because there's a big company has bought over their land. So you take away all these things and you are in your own bubble. You believe in your own argument. So this becomes real. So I think that is the problem, you know.
So you're telling me that the British divide and rule strategy is still working until today?
Yes, it is reinforced by the politician today. Our political parties are race-based. You know, why does Pakatan Harapan has an Indian manifesto in the last election? Because they want to get the Indian votes, you know. So, and then, you know, so this is problematic, you know. A nation need to have, you know, so you have like one country with three systems, you know, and that is problematic, you know, two court systems. So I think even though we have political parties which are race-based, we have a lot of WhatsApp groups which are race-based, everything, and we got newspapers, you know, which actually only talks about certain issues.
Oh, what do real revolutions look like? I guess that's the question, right? What do real revolutions look like, and what does it take to make it happen?
I think revolution ideas are beautiful because it talks about a mass group of people going about change, you know, and changes happens, you know, because of people's power from below. And, you know, revolution has happened all over the world and it's continually happening, you know, in all over the world where common people go to the state, take over power and all that, you know. But then what I also realize is people who talk about revolution, what is the biggest ingredients of a revolution is people. Even in Venezuela or even in Chile before, where people been through election, even in Nepal, the Maoist party, won election, you know, they didn't win through armed struggle, they won through election, you know, right. The Maoist party. But what you need is election or revolution, you need the people. Only people can bring about change, you know. So what kind of work do we do? Even you talk about revolution, you need to build the people's unit, right? You need to go to the rural area, you need to go to the urban poor. You know, a lot of slogans like 99%, the movement of the 99%. But then, you know, the work is not done with the 99%. The work is done with 5%, 10%. So that cannot make a revolution, you know. So I think, so people romanticize with the idea of revolution without doing the work needed for a revolution to happen. For me, I always say, good, let's do the revolution, but what other works need to be done, you know? Let's not talk about slogans which will make us happy, you know, make us look so great, you know, when we talk to people about revolution. But what basic grassroots work or what specific work have you done to build the revolution? And revolution also means people on the ground are aware why they want the change, not making use of them, you know. And a lot of people are very cynical. They said election time, give the voters 100 ringgit, 50 ringgit, they will change votes, you know. So I think revolution is nothing wrong with revolution. It's great, but it must be deeply rooted. People must consciously, that's why we call, you need to build the critical mass, you know. Critical mass is masses who actually think about change, you know. To do that, of course, they have to decide. And we have to do work towards that. We have to create those kind of apparatus so that people get involved. You know?
Now, one of the most pointed things mentioned in the article is how the dream for the Ketuanan Rakyat to replace Ketuanan Parti Perkauman, that the battles become class-based like we saw in the 70s and not race-based like we've been seeing since. What went wrong? Because I wasn't born in the 70s, I was born in the 90s, and when I was born, you know, this world, it was Malaysia was already a racialized highly racialized political landscape where every single political decision since the day I was born seems to be just centered around this idea of race. So what went wrong?
Actually, if you go back to history, 1947, British left Malaysia, Japanese left Malaysia in 1945, and then British came after that. Between 45 to 48, that was the golden era of the People's Movement. Like you have groups like Putra, ANCJA, and they came up with what is called Perlembagaan Rakyat, People's Constitution, And this People's Constitution was so massive, They did the one-day Hartal in 1947, October. And it was great because a lot of people participated. Bus driver, there was massive people. And they demanded, those demands at that time were basic demands, 8 hours work. You must have... And one issue on race was, they said we should call all ourselves Malays because the People's Constitution was for the nation of Malaya. There was no Malaysia then. So they said, let's call all of us Malays. And the leaders of the MIC then and MCA agreed to that. So imagine if that problem was resolved in 1947, but what will happen was British, they also demanded the British leave the country. So British with the UMNO, and then they declared emergencies 1948 until 1960. So during that time, they put all those who fought for multiracial politics all in jail, used the emergency, crushed 95% of the unions and all that. And they had so the constitution we have now is Malay, you call it Article 151. No? But what was even worse is, when the 1969 racial riot happened, the new economic policy and all that, there was reinforcement to that. So every party after 1969, DAP, Gerakan, every party became more focusing on race-based issues than class-based issues. So before 69, you had groups like Barisan Socialist, all the issues faced were people's workers issues, farmers' issues, fishermen issues. So, but you see, today's politics, main issues during election are race-based issues. Pakatan Harapan lost power because they appointed supposedly an Indian AG and a Chinese finance minister, rather than policies, though they had some very good policies, So I think that is why things have changed. It's time to go back, And like those days, people like Burhanuddin Hilmi could sit with Tan Cheng Lok and come up with a multiracial policy. So I think COVID gives us a lot of lessons, because in COVID, good thing about COVID is it doesn't see you're a Indian, Malay or Chinese, puts everybody into the hospitals and,
Yeah.
And you want to get vaccine, Even vaccine, some people say, oh, Malay, they are giving Pfizer, non-Malay, they are giving all this argument. But in a certain way, it breaks down those things, And it's important to reflect on those things and build on it, So I think those are issues like health is more important, health issues. So all the races should come together and fight for public health care, better public health care. All the people should fight for better housing for the poor, better benefits for the farmers, fishermen, better subsidies. I think these are the issues which we need to bring forward, To go back to class-based politics.
So what do we do, right? Because how do we, you said, there was this beautiful period in the 40s where it was the peak for the people's movements. And in fact, that sort of built right up to 1969. And then the 70s changed everything, right? So now we are in 2021. We are about to head into 2022. How do we bring back the 60s in that sense, in that sense of people's movements, to bridge the gap? How do we start an actual revolution, like a proper revolution, more than the middle class clubhouse Twitter bubble? How do we start an actual revolution against the elite? So where do we start?
I think one critical thing why a lot of things cannot be handled is race-based politics. And I think one main issue is Article 151, you know. But I want to give you the interpretation of SABM, Saya Anak Bangsa Malaysia. And a very interesting, because everybody, you know, the Malay says 151 gives us the safeguard. The non-Malay says 151 discriminates us. Okay? But if you read that article properly, the first line says, the role of the Yang di-Pertuan Agong is to look after the second rights of special rights of the Malay and the Bumiputra Sabah Sabah. The second line says, the Yang di-Pertuan Agong's work is to take care of the welfare of other races in the country. If you read this one and two together, it means the role of the Yang di-Pertuan Agong is to take care of the interests of everybody. So the issue is resolved there. That's if right. You look at our Article 8 of our Constitution, there's an article against discrimination. So we are just harping on something when you can interpret it beautifully to say 151 is a statement of unity for all Malaysians. So get resolved it. Now, what we need as a nation, you know? So because we never cut, we're always fighting over the first thing, you know? Then you go into issues of vernacular schools, language, dobis for Muslims, you know, we go into other things, you know, issues of, you know, in this country is the only way I said, you know, dogs, pigs, everything becomes political issues, you know, yeah. You know, lembu, everything becomes a political issue, you know. So I think you need to first thing say, resolve the first part, no? There's nothing wrong with 151. Why are we going against, you know, creating all these things? And you need to build multiracial groupings to fight, you know. And even discrimination need to be raised by a multiracial group. That means if you see if there's a discrimination, if there's death in custody, a lot of Indians are dying in death in custody, the reaction shouldn't be only from the Indians. Why must Indian MPs talk about the issue? So you have to create the platform that you must get this multiracial reaction to every issues, then it will change the narrative. It's not easy. So first you have to entangle the racial thing. At the same time, you need to build on issue basis. Like for PSM, for example, we try our best not to build on race-based issues. You know? We try to fight on housing issues, health issues, because they cut across races. So I think important to build many groups. Kita Lawan, all that, very good initiative. So now Kita Lawan fighting for ICUs in all hospitals, improving rural hospitals. Kita Lawan, you know, fighting for better wages, for better protection for Grab drivers and riders. Kita Lawan fighting for better things, you know. Other than just Kita Lawan minta Muhyiddin datang jawatan. So if we can change that, then every race can feel comfortable, you know. Kita Lawan fights for IPCMC. So how do you change this thing? It needs to be built through a multiracial platform. Issues. At the meantime, we have to say, we have to diminish the racial arguments. You know?
Yeah. On that note, Arul, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Welcome, Sardar. All the best. Big fight.
I've been speaking with S. Arulchelvan, the Vice President of Parti Socialist Malaysia. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.